Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. Now, please note that we've extended our offer on questions used on this program to those postmarked before December 31st of this year. The senders will receive not the usual $10 in war stamps, but a $50 war bond plus the Junior Encyclopedia Britannica. And if we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you, Dan Brown. Ladies and gentlemen, here we are back in New York after our bond tour, together with those spontaneous and unrehearsed experts, Mr. Franklin P. Adams and Mr. John Kieran of the New York Sun. And to signalize the opening of the World Series, we have with us two eminent know-it-alls in the field of sport, the radio commentators Bill Stern and Red Barber, who is announcing the World Series for Gillette. Mr. Barber and Mr. Stern, we're going to begin with a question that may possibly come from a friend of yours. Does either of you know Mr. Caswell Adams of Port Washington, New York? Mr. Stern, do you know him?
Yes, I do.
And what field does he...
Cass Adams is the new correspondent of the New York Daily Mirror. He's widely syndicated. He replaced Bob Considine, who
good sports writer.
Excellent.
Scared of his question, Mr. Stern?
Well, he knows his sports pretty well.
I'll see if you do. Now, here is a very interesting question coming from Cass Adams of Port Washington, New York. What outstanding event in the field of sports is suggested by each of these announcers' reports? Now, we have Ed Hurley here, who's going to give us some announcements in regular professional style, three of them, and you have to, one after the other, figure out the outstanding event that is being described in each of these sports announcements, and we have to get three out of three. Is that clear? Okay, let's go. Go ahead, Ed.
We're in Chicago. The fight's starting. Here's the bell. First round. The challenger stalks the champ. He jabs. He jabs again. The champ backs away, but he's swinging. He lets go with a right. It lands on the left cheek of the challenger as he's coming in, and the challenger is down. One, two, he's up. The fighting continues.
Now, that can refer to only one particular sports event. Mr. Stern.
Well, it would have to be a prize fight.
Yes, but which particular one? I could have got that myself. Mr. Kieran?
That was Jim Braddock knocking Joe Louis down in the first round of their fight, in which Braddock, I think, was knocked out in the sixth.
In the eighth.
Eighth, sorry.
That's practically perfect, Mr. Kieran. Does that come back to you, Mr. Barber, Mr. Stern? That was in what year? Mr. Kieran, what year was that?
Well, I had to go backward now.
All right, go backward. You look very pretty that way, Mr. Kieran.
That was about... 5 or 6 years ago.
Yes, 1937. Six years ago, exactly. All right, that gives us one right. Now we have to get the next. Go ahead, Ed.
It's the eighth game of the series. Last half of the ninth. Score, 1-0. One out, man on first. Batter up. Here's the pitch. It's a grounder down to second. The batter's out at first. The man on first moves down to second. He's dashing down to third. There's a rifle throw to third. It gets him and he's out. What a double play. The game and the series are over.
Mr. Adams, are you sure of this?
Did he say the eighth game?
No, he didn't say anything about the eighth game.
Yes, he said
the eighth game of the series. That's right, Mr. Adams.
That would be the Red Sox and the Giants in 1912.
May I have a...
Mr. Kieran, you want to take that
yes,
ball away?
Yes, I would say that would... That was Kelly, Long George Kelly, who threw that ball. He threw it to third base... And it may have been Aaron Ward that he caught going over there. It was the last game of the 1923 World Series played at the Polo Grounds, I believe.
Well, now, I have it as the 1921 World Series.
21.
Between the Giants
well,
and the...
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Johnny Rawlings caught the ball. He threw it to Kelly, and the man who was on first base made a dash for third, and Kelly whipped it across to Heinie Groh, was it?
Oh, are you asking me?
I think perhaps it was Heinie Groh. It was a great throw by Kelly.
Any of you professional sports commentators want to contradict Mr. Kieran?
Mr. Stern, Mr. Barber. Now, Mr. Adams, let's get back to this antediluvian game of yours. When was this? 1912?
That's the only time I remember they played eight games.
Oh,
Now, do you mind if I accept Mr. Kieran's answer, Mr. Adams?
I'd love it.
Because his documentation is superb. I'm going to stick with Mr. Kieran on that. Now, let's have the third of these. Mr. Herlihy?
There are only a few seconds left to play. Now, it looks as though this college team is going to add number 26 to the 25 games won over the years. The score is 14-13. The Trailers have the ball. Well, wait a minute. A guard just stepped back out of the line. He's trying for a placement kick. He swings his foot, and the kick is good. That puts him ahead by 16-14, and the gun. The champs have been beaten, and the streak is over.
Well, I have two hands. I have Mr. Barber and Mr. Stern. Mr. Barber.
Well, that would be Southern California coming into Notre Dame.
Yeah, when was that?
I'm not certain of the year,
Mr.
but I know
Stern?
That...
I'd say it was 1930.
31, Bill. That's near enough, yes. Remember who was it that kicked the field goal to end the game? Johnny Baker, USC guard. Either of you see this game, by the way? Well, that's perfect, Mr. Barber. That's exactly right. And that gives us 3 out of 3 on what seems to an amateur like myself a very tough question. We'll come back to that 1912 game after a while, friend. Here's one from Barbara B. Rubin of Gary, Indiana. Suppose I ask you to quote, let's say, 3 lines from verse or song that include any terms used in baseball. Now, for example, in Hamlet, there is a line, a hit, a very palpable hit. A hit is, of course, a baseball term or any other baseball term at all used in any line of poetry. Mr. Adams.
Out.
You mean out?
Out. Out. Damned spot.
Ah, yes, that's the one. Very good. Lady Macbeth in the sleepwalking scene. Mr. Kieran.
Fair is foul and foul is fair, which is Macbeth.
Yes, that gives us two. Both fair and foul. 2 baseball terms. Any others? Mr. Adams again.
Strike when the iron is hot.
That's a pretty line. A pretty line. And Mr. Kieran?
Two minds with but a single thought, 2 hearts that beat as one. Single.
Oh, that's single.
Yeah.
Gee, that's tough. Mr. Barber.
Well, there is break.
Break. Yes, I suppose that could be a good one, Mr. Adams.
There's no place like home.
Very good. You have another good one, Mr. Kieran?
Double, toil and trouble.
Well, that gives us 5 or 6. That's too easy. Try this one from Albert S. Coleman of Mendon, Mississippi. This is a bridge question, gentlemen. I don't know which of you play bridge. Mr. Adams, do you play bridge?
No, sir.
All right, you just hang on to the outside railing here for a while. Now, suppose you were playing bridge, and your partner wanted to give you a signal. What would he mean if he hummed these tunes? Now, don't worry, I'm not going to hum them, but our studio pianist is going to play these tunes, and they should indicate to you a particular bridge signal if you know the title of the tune. Go ahead, Joe. Mr. Stern.
I'll take a Steve on that. That's past the ammunition. I suppose your partner, or you're asking your partner to declare what he has in his hand.
To pass, yes.
That's right.
That's right. That's exactly right. What were you going to say, Mr. Barber? Your hand was going up in a sort of hesitant way there. You play bridge, don't you?
Well, I play at it. I was just solving the title and trying to figure it into bridge. Bill was having me with pass. I had praise.
Praise won't do you a bit of good.
Not in bridge.
No, no, that won't do you a bit of good. All right, let's have the second of these. Now, Mr. Barber.
Well, that would be Lover Come Back to Me, which would mean hearts.
Oh, that's a pretty thought, yeah. Now, I hadn't thought of that. That's very pretty. But the phrase itself, Lover Come Back to Me, might mean what in bridge? Although I'll accept your answer, Mr. Barber.
It might mean back with finesse.
Return a lead.
Yeah, return the suit that I led
yeah,
you.
Yeah, return
yes,
the
that's
lead.
Right. But I think that Red's answer is very good, don't you, Mr. Kieran?
Wonderful.
Very pretty.
Thank
All
you, John.
Right. These sports commentators do stick together. Let's have the third and last. Mr. Stern.
I believe that's 2 hearts in waltz time, so I suppose you're asking for the bid of 2 hearts.
Yes, that's right. Or you're asking for a bid, or you're declaring that you have 2 hearts. Quite right. Well, that's 3 out of 3. How about this one from Mrs. P.B. Kroom of Houston, Texas? I'm going to give you 3 commands. Each of them has the word go in it. And each of them is a quotation from poetry. I'm going to ask you to complete the quotation. Here's the first. Go, lovely rose. Go, lovely rose. Mr. Kieran.
Tell her that wastes her time and mine, I believe.
Her time and me.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you remember how it goes on? It's not easy to remember that one. Mr. Adams, you had your hand up.
I don't remember how it is, but I think it's by Edmund Waller.
It is quite... That's quite correct. By Edmund Waller, and the poem is called Go, Lovely Rose. Go, Lovely Rose, tell her that wastes her time and me, that now she knows when I resemble her to thee, how sweet and fair she seems to be. Rather a tough quotation, I think. Now, the second one is, Oh, Mary, go. How does that continue? Oh, Mary, go. Mr. Adams.
Oh, Mary, go and call the cattle home across the sands of Dee.
That's exactly right, Mr. Adams. Very good. And who wrote the poem?
Probably Robert Burns.
No. Mr. Kieran?
Was that Kingsley?
Yes, Charles Kingsley. The poem called The Sands of Dee. Call the cattle home across the sands of Dee. Thank you, Mr. Adams. And the third and last, please go away. Mr. Barber.
And let me sleep.
That's right. What's it from?
That's from the song of that name.
That's right. Don't disturb my slumber deep and so forth. And who wrote this song? Mr. Adams, do you remember? This is during...
Harry Williams.
Harry Williams, Von Tilzer, I think.
Maybe Von Tilzer.
Von Tilzer it was. Try this one for Mrs. Worth Johnson of Fort Wayne, Indiana. Here is this is a very interesting question. Why should you keep a bottle of wine lying down instead of in an upright position? You may have noticed that people do keep the... wine in a horizontal position, Mr. Kieran?
You keep the cork covered that way.
And why should you want to do that?
Because then the air won't come to the top of the bottle and start rotting the cork and seeping out through there and souring the wine.
That's right. It keeps the cork moist, and therefore it keeps the bottle airtight. Now, which of you is a father? Never mind, Adams. all fathers. And then all of you should know the answer to this question. Why do you hold a baby over your left shoulder after a feeding? I don't know, Mr. Barber, that you've ever given your baby a feeding.
Yes.
But, Mr. Barber?
Yes, I have.
Well, now, why do you hold your baby over your left shoulder after a feeding? Or perhaps you don't. Have you held it upside down?
No, I remember. Yes, that would be right. I don't know. It just seems to be natural. You put your left hand under the baby's shoulder blades and right hand a little lower and hoist.
Yes, but that's a particular reason for doing it, Mr. Barber. Mr. Stern? Mr.
No.
Kieran?
I don't know, Mr. Bones. What's the answer?
Well, after the baby has swallowed air during its feeding, it wants to get rid of some of that air.
Why the left shoulder?
Well, because you hold the baby up in your right hand, and it's natural to throw it over your left shoulder. You try to take the baby up in your right hand, throw it over your right shoulder. And unless that baby is heavily insured, you're going to miss a baby after a while. Yes, it swallowed air, and you help it to get rid of the air by belching. You hold it over your left shoulder to enable it to do that. And you pat it on the back. Don't you folks remember anything of your early paternity? I have to call that one wrong. Why must you be careful not to slam the door of the oven when you're baking a cake? Do you know that, Mr. Barber?
Yes, because it'll make the cake fall.
But why? That's true. That's the answer. But why should the cake fall if you slam
the
door of
the
oven?
Well, the cake as it is being baked has gases that are very... lightly held inside the cake, and a jar will release them.
That's very good. That's right. Yes, that's right. The vibration breaks the gas pockets that hold the carbon dioxide in the dough. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. And she brought forth butter in a lordly dish.
Well, the quotation comes from the 5th chapter of the Book of Judges. And filling a lordly dish with butter certainly would be plenty difficult now that it's up to 16 points a pound. However, down in Heinz home kitchens, they've made some interesting discoveries on the butter problem. They've found that Heinz yellow mustard is excellent to use instead of butter when you're making sandwiches. Now, you can imagine what the creamy smoothness of Heinz mustard and its teasy, spicy flavor could do for a mere cheese or cold meat sandwich. And say, Heinz mustard on a fried egg sandwich, Western style, but that's something. For Heinz is no ordinary mustard. It is made of selected seed grown in our own California fields. It's ground in stone mills the painstaking old-time way, and blended with Heinz mellow vinegar and rare spices. To use instead of butter on sandwiches, we suggest Heinz yellow mustard because of its delicate flavor and bright gold color. Mustard is such an important accessory to good wartime meals, you really should keep both kinds of Heinz mustard on hand. Good, strong, brown mustard and yellow mustard. Both cost only a few pennies and no ration stamps.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from Robert J. Waldron in New York City. Again, this is a musical question, and again, you have to get 2 out of 3. Each of these songs that's going to be played introduced to fame a performer who was little known previously. I want you to identify for us the song, the singer, and the vehicle. Let's have the first. Now, Mr. Stern?
I believe that was My Heart Belongs to Daddy.
Correct.
And it introduced Mary Martin.
Correct.
To Broadway and made a star out of her.
And then what musical comedy was it that she appeared singing this song? That's the tough part. Any one of you remember some years ago? It was Leave It to Me. Leave It to Me. Well, that gives us 2/3 of that question. I think we ought to call that right. Now, let's have the second one, Mr. Carter. I have 2 hands. I'll try Mr. Barber.
Well, that's... I've got rhythm.
Right.
And the singer would be Ethel Merman.
That's
and
correct.
The show would be Girl Crazy.
That's absolutely right. Very good. What were we going to say, Mr. Stern?
Exactly what Mr. Barber said.
That's safe. And now the third and last. Mr. Stern.
That is Lady of the Evening,
correct.
A Irving Berlin composition, which was written for either his first or second music box review, which opened his theater and was sung by John Steele.
Gollies, I have that as sung by Grace Moore.
Am Could I be. Wrong? She was in the same show, but I believe that John Steele sang that in the closing of the first act. It was the finale of the first act in the music box review, either Berlin's first or second.
Well, it was 1926.
That's
which
correct.
One was that?
Which he built his theater. That would be his second show.
Second show. Well, you sound very convincing to me. Very convincing to me, Mr. Stern. Very smooth-tongued you are. I think that passes us successfully on to the next question from Lawrence A. Johnson of 175 Cool Avenue, Syracuse, New York. This is a question about retirements and comebacks. Get 2 out of 3. What retired heavyweight champion attempted to come back and was defeated? Mr. Kieran.
Well, for one of them, Jim Jeffries.
Yes, I think that'd be the most famous instance. I don't think there's another instance of a heavyweight champion who did that.
Oh, yes. Oh,
sure.
Trying to come back? Yeah. Schmeling tried to come back.
And was defeated. Well,
oh, he certainly was.
Mr. Stern?
Jack Dempsey.
Murdered.
That's
right,
come
too.
Back.
When was the Jim... When did Jim Jeffries retire? And when did he come back? What dates were they? What was the interval between the comeback and his retirement?
Jeffries retired around the early 1900, and he tried to come back around 1908, was it?
Well, Jack Johnson, the Johnson fight was 1910. And he'd retired as champion in 1905, so there's an interval of 5 years. What American president retired from politics, tried to come back, and was defeated? Mr. Kieran again.
Theodore Roosevelt.
Yes. Retired in
1908. Defeated in 1912 when he ran as a progressive candidate on the Bull Moose ticket.
That's quite right. And what nation, gentlemen, retired from World War I, vanquished, and is now defeating its conqueror in World War II? Mr. Kieran.
Italy.
Oh, now come.
What'd
come.
You say? Excuse me, I wasn't here. Retired vanquished?
Now, let's see. I'll do that all over
again.
Yeah,
now, I'm sorry.
Karen. What nation retired from World War I vanquished and is defeating the conqueror in World War II, Mr. Stern?
I'd say Russia.
Yes, and the antagonist, of course, is Germany. I guess you weren't listening
as
attentively as you generally are, Mr. Kieran. All right. Try this one from Francis D. Fisher of Piedmont, California. What guest of the theater or literature persuaded his host's children to leave home? That's the situation in what play? Mr. Stern.
I believe it's the Maxwell Anderson show, A Guest in the House.
Now, there you have me. I don't remember never having seen it.
Well, the girl is taken into the home and completely disrupts the house. I don't remember inviting the children to leave. She invited the whole family to leave.
That's not enough. You have
you
to invite the children.
Question?
Mr. Adams?
Repeat the question.
Say, you're doing a cure on me, Mr. Adams. What guest of the theater persuaded his host's children to leave home? I think there is only one answer, Mr. Adams.
Man who came to dinner.
Yes, that's the chap, Sheridan Whiteside, the man who came to dinner. Now, how about one who stole his host's prize silverware? This might be in a novel. Mr. Kieran.
Yes, that was Jean Valjean in Les Miserables when he stole the silver candlesticks and the 6 silver spoons and forks and knives from the old bishop.
6 of those, 18 altogether. Yes, that's right. Sound as if you were there yourself, Mr. Kieran.
I can see it now.
What guest was almost successful in coming between husband and wife? This is, again, a theatrical question. A guest in the home who was almost successful in coming between husband and wife, Mr. Adams.
Sounds something by Sidney Howard.
Not that I recollect, Mr. Adams, unless
the
you...
Silver cord.
Well, if you can argue your way to this in a well-known Stern manner, okay. Mr. Stern?
I'll go back to the guest in the house. Could that be correct for this one? The guest was taken in and tried her best to separate the husband from the wife.
He did. You stick to that play
for
all possible questions.
I certainly do.
Never having seen it, you may be right, Mr. Barber.
I'd be more inclined to say the doctor's dilemma.
I don't remember that as being a situation, no. But in one other of Shaw's plays, Candida...
Candida, the poet Marchbanks, does attempt to come.
That's the one. Seems to me that you fellows were rather rough and ragged on that one. That will send $57 in war bonds and stamps to Miss Fisher and a set of the potatoes. Right, and how about this one? From Lou Gerdes of Omaha, Nebraska. I think we ought to get all on this. It seems to me a pretty easy question. It's about famous brothers. Name the brothers who are a famous battery on the same team. Ought to have four hands on that. I think I'll call on Mr. Adams.
Cooper and Cooper.
Cooper and Cooper, yes. What team?
The coming champions or the Cardinals.
And first names, Mr. Adams?
Mort and, what's that other boy? Walker Cooper.
Yes, Morton and Walker Cooper. Very good. Name the brothers who were knocked out by the same man. Knocked out, Mr. Stern.
I'd say the Bear brothers, yes. Max Bear, Max and Buddy.
Max and Buddy Bear, knocked out by Joe Lewis. How about some dates on that, remember? More or less? Well, Max was knocked out first. He's the...
Say, Max went out about 1936 and Buddy about 1940.
Well, that's approximately right, 35 and 41. Mr. Stern, how about some brothers who all play the same position? Baseball. Mr. Kieran.
Well, the Musial brothers played, one played left field for the Giants, that was Irish, and Bob played left field for the Yankees.
Yes.
That is when it was the Sunfield.
And how about Mr. Barber?
The DiMaggio brothers.
Yes, DiMaggio brothers.
All center fielders.
All outfielders. Joe, Vincent, and Dominic. Are there any other famous brother teams play the same position, Mr. Barber?
In a pinch, I guess the Wainers could play the same outfield. They did pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's assume there's a pinch. How about this one? Well, suppose we hold that for a moment. Mr. Grauer, you caused quite a little excitement around here with your idea of using mustard instead of butter on your bread. But Mr. Adams here says that what he wants is a lot of butter for his baked potato. Now, what can you say to that?
Well, you're playing right into my hand, Mr. Fadiman. I'll bet there are millions of people who simply can't face the thought of a baked potato without a great golden gob of butter sunk down into its middle. But did you ever think of using sour cream instead of butter? A big dab of sour cream mixed with just a little dash of Heinz yellow mustard? Now, let me tell you, that's wonderful. Sour cream, you know, tastes a good deal like butter. That's natural. And that little speck of Heinz yellow mustard gives the beautiful buttery color you're hankering for. And it adds its own subtle, tangy flavor, too. For Heinz mustard has a rare delicacy. Its extraordinary goodness can be traced to the quality of the mustard seed, to the stone mill grinding process, the vintage vinegar and rare spices used by Heinz. Now, do try that sour cream and mustard on a baked potato or on any hot vegetable. But be sure to use Heinz mustard, for Heinz is the mustard which gives that special touch.
Thank you, Ben Graham. Mr. Kieran?
Such a persuasive speech that it'll probably get sour cream and mustard rationed.
Well, Ben, if that's true, Heinz will never forgive you. Try this one from Mrs. Marie Rip Talley of St. Paul, Minnesota. This is about famous barbers, in fact or fiction, professional or amateur barbers. Which one caused a hero's blindness, was responsible for... the blindness of a famous hero, Mr. Adams.
Delilah.
Delilah, yes. The hero being?
Samson.
Our good friend Samson. One was soloist for the Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra? Mr. Barber?
I was.
That's right, Mr. Barber. That is the... you're an amateur barber, of course, not a professional one. And what did you play with the Philharmonic Symphony, Mr. Barber?
My vocal cords.
Good.
Well, I got away with it. I didn't throw anything.
And what was the composition?
Well, that was Russell Bennett's Symphony in D for the Dodgers.
Good.
Which, despite the claims that Tchaikovsky and Beethoven and Brahms wrote a few good ones, I think that's the greatest symphony ever composed.
Well, you're
about the Dodgers.
You're just carried away by the subject, Mr. Barber, that's all.
Well, it was a very interesting piece of music, and in the fourth inning, we had a ball game in which I was the narrator. I really got in the symphony with a rain check.
Hey, that was the high point of your career, wasn't it, Ray?
Yes, it was.
Are you ever going to come back and be a music commentator again for us?
Well, I watched under the MacPhail.
You did? Boy, am I glad this program is almost over. You might bring it to that speech. Well, we have one more barber to go, folks. What professional or amateur barber gave a girl a shave? Mr. Adams.
The barber of Seville.
Gave a girl a
shave.
The
only one I ever heard of besides the others.
He didn't give a girl a shave, though, I don't think. No, in The Great Dictator with Charlie Chaplin. Remember Charlie Chaplin gives the girl a shave by mistake in one of the early sequences of the picture? Well, that gives us one wrong. We're only supposed to get 2 out of 3 on that. How about this one from Helen K. Weil of New York City? I'll name one of several important jobs held by a political leader. You're to name the person and another job that he holds. If I say Minister of Defense, you are now to give me the person I'm referring to and some other job he holds. This is a living, great political leader. Which one and what other job does he hold? Well, there aren't so very many, Mr. Adams.
He may be Prime Minister of England.
That's quite right. That's the exact answer. Yes, it's Winston Churchill. He's also Prime Minister of England, and he holds another, third job, Mr. Adams. Would you know that one?
No.
First Lord of the Treasury. Now, suppose I name this job Premier. Now, this is, take it easy, this is tough. What famous political leader holds that job plus one or more other jobs, Mr. Kieran?
Well, the Premier of Russia is Stalin.
Right. Now, what other
job? He's the commander of the chief of the army.
Yes, that's correct. He's not called that, but that's the equivalent. Yeah. People's Commissar of Defense. He's also a marshal and chairman of the State Committee on Defense. Now, this is a tough one. President. What political leader? What other job does he hold? Mr. Kieran.
Well, President Roosevelt is president. He's also the president of the American Red Cross.
No, that would be wrong, because that's part of his job, to be commander-in-chief. Chiang Kai-shek is president and also generalissimo and chairman of the Supreme National Defense Council.
I said Red Cross.
That would give us 2 out of 3, and I'm afraid that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Bill Stern. Thank you, Red Barber, for batting them out so neatly this evening. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps and 1 set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will be in the starting line, together with 2 of America's most eminent writers on science, Mr. William Beebe, famous naturalist, and Mr. Donald Kulross Peaty, whose most recent book is Journey into America. Remember, send your...